I know why you did that story on David Cobb. Because you had a faster 40 time in high school, or so you claim.
Yeah.
Tell you what, a 4.58, that's not good. It's not horrible, but it's not good.
Fourth fastest among running backs.
No, it's not.
Mike, I don't know if he's ever heard the Hellboy here playing the bongos or not.
It would...
He might not.
Right? Oh, I'm sorry. Stepped on the bongos.
Oh, that's okay.
Oh, they haven't even started yet.
He's just warming up. He's still getting on.
There they go.
Is he not good?
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. He's getting better.
4.58 would be the 15th fastest time.
That's fast. Running back?
From the combine. Yep.
But were you really fast, Hellboy?
Well, it must have been... It must have been a different list I looked at as to who's projected to go in that area. So I only saw four other times that were better than him.
Well, these guys threw out 4.4s occasionally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the guys, Ontario McCallop from Auburn, went a 4.34.
Wow.
No, wait a minute. That's from, what am I looking? Okay, that was from, I thought it was the 2015. That was from 2013. Maybe he did have the fourth fastest for 2015. I can't believe they threw the wrong one up here. We'll have to take a look at that, but
we won't want me to be right again, so.
That would be, be very uncommon. We are joined by Marsh Hallberg with us the last segment, too, from Hallberg Criminal Defense. Marsh's sports law segment on 105 The Ticket, brought to you by Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock Systems. If you need to drive, they can help. Also joined and excited to be joined by Mike Gelfand. Mike and I were together on the KQ Morning Show for about a quarter of a century. And Marsh and Mike, you guys are comfortable with each other. You've known each other for years. And
sure.
Mike, you were mentioning about Aaron Hernandez. And
it just fascinates me because I figured the jury would be out long enough to have a free meal, come back, and they'd throw him back and turn the key. But jury's out a week. You got to think that there's a little reasonable doubt here.
Yeah, it's a real interesting strategy, Mike. Like we have a... we write a weekly article on the Ticket website, and our article this week is about the whole Hernandez trial and the different strategies. The state took over 7 weeks to put in their case. They had, 132 witnesses, 400 and some exhibits, every, dot every I, cross every T kind of approach to it. This defense gets up, and literally one day with three witnesses, they say, we're done. And the whole idea is burden of proof. And they kept their theory of what to do till the very end. It's a very common tactic in defense cases. You wait till the facts are in, and then you figure out your argument at the end. And they did that in this case. It was clear based upon the video, they had DNA on a marijuana joint right by the body that had Hernandez's DNA along as the deceased. They had cell phone records. They had other stuff. It was clear that Hernandez had to have been at the murder.
Right.
And so they got up in the closing, and the argument was to basically say, well, clearly this poor man was there, but gosh, he never knew anybody else was going to hurt him, and he's not the one that killed him. Somebody else did it. So therefore, he just was a complete surprise that this death was going to happen, so he's not guilty. And he's got him thinking about it. So it's an interesting approach.
Well, I just thought it was a Hail Mary. I didn't think it was a real serious defense because when you looked at all the evidence, it seemed like a slam dunk.
Yeah. Now, Marsh, I've been saying it to you for weeks, and I said it to Mike earlier. I think he would have had a much better chance to get off on this if they had not won the Super Bowl. But I think that they know they can win without him. I mean, it sounds right. I'm serious about that.
Don't have any strong allegiance to him. Well, there are a couple of the big rulings that happened in the case. You know, there was a text that he had sent, Hernandez had sent before, and said, guess who I'm with, or something like Mr. NFL or something alluding to the fact he was with a professional NFL player. Mm-hmm. The judge kept that out for a bunch of technical reasons I won't get into. They didn't let him get into he's sitting in jail anyway for a double murder from 2012.
Right.
They didn't let the jury, although you wonder if they knew about it or not, they didn't let him get into that. And the immunity that they gave the fiancé to testify, she says, that smelled like marijuana. I didn't want to look in. I didn't want to know, so I didn't look in the box to see if it had the murder weapon in it. So those three rulings, I think, were very, very helpful to the defense.
Should we make anything about it that there's still no ruling? I mean, what did they deliberate, 3 days or 2 days last week?
Yeah, this is the seventh day.
Seventh day of deliberations?
Yeah, seventh day.
Well, that's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, no, the old saying is the longer you're out, the better your shot. I mean, we all argue what the theories and stuff, but I still have that philosophy. The longer you're out, the more likely the defense may win.
Is that your personal experience, too?
Yeah, it has been mine. Now, the other box could be here is they have different charges to sort through. You know, they got weapons charges. They could have other things. Mm-hmm. And they could have a situation where they've already kind of decided on the big case. Maybe they've decided
maybe they
on
like the
case.
Lunch they get.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're going to be getting squirrely after this long and deliberating. But, so they may be just fighting over the weapons stuff.
Now, Marsh, have you ever had a jury where you're, they dismiss the jury and you're just gathering your stuff up and they come back already? I mean, what's the fastest jury that's ever come back for you?
7 minutes.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Did you win that one?
7 minutes. No, I lost that one. That was my first year as a lawyer.
7 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. And looking back, the case should have never been charged.
It's like a potty break.
Yeah, well, it was one of those things. I'm brand new out at the Colorado County Attorney's Office. They go, and I was trying two cases a week. It was an amazing experience. And they really, my first month, they go, here, go try this case. And you just walk in and you try the trial. And, you know, not knowing anything, you didn't look and go, this is... I mean, I was voting for the guy at the end of the case. Going, this is, it was just a, it was, yeah, it was a long story. Anyway, yeah, it was 7 minutes. But on the defense side, pretty quick. I'd say within an hour or two, which is long enough to go to the bathroom, and elect a foreperson, and if they don't go to lunch, it's a pretty quick thing. So yeah, a lot of times, you know, there's studies that say the jurors know how they're going to vote by the end of the opening arguments a lot of times. So they've already made up their mind, which is really wrong to do. But you kind of get a vibe when you're going through this, if it's a downhill bet or not.
Now, do you ever get concerned, I would if I were an attorney, and that you know that most of those people have a very short attention span.
Yeah.
That you lost them. I mean, how do you know that you can keep them? They're not paying attention.
No, you can't. And that's why it's much like radio or anything else. You got sound bites. You try to keep people's entertainment for a period of
more
time.
More sound bites there.
And
they'll
go through. But, so you, it's really a challenge. Again, visual things I like in closing arguments. I like to have had exhibits, visual pictures to show, whatever it might be, a physical.
So you're a prop attorney.
I do, absolutely. I love props. It's people, it keeps their attention, and I move around the courtroom quite a bit, too. I think it keeps them moving. Also, a little, you know, strategy when you pick a jury, a lot of times attorneys just go right down the row. You know, start with juror number one, then you go to juror number two. And everybody falls asleep because they know they're not up or they're already done. When I pick a jury, I jump all over. I ask one question of this guy, and then I jump over and ask one question of this gal, and I jump around the whole box with questions constantly so that nobody knows if they're going to be the next person to ask the question. I'll try to keep them engaged.
Do you ever use those jury experts, or do you do that yourself?
I haven't. I mean, there's some value, I think, to that, but again, you do it long enough. Many times I'll have somebody else in the courtroom that may be in the back that is taking notes or looking just for physical cues, those kind of things, and then when we take a break, we talk about those. Facebook's been a big thing that comes up. You know, you can go on and search people and find out things there about them. And use that data that maybe you're not even asking them about, but I know what you got on your Facebook. And
so what's your favorite courtroom drama movie?
Boy, that is tough. You know, you can't handle the truth is a great classic line.
Yeah.
So Jack Nicholson's tough.
You can't handle the truth.
There you go. So it's a good one
there. Boy. Now,
Bob, you're a big movie buff.
I am. I like Justice for All.
Justice for All is good, yeah. Of course, the classic 12 Angry Men.
Yeah,
it is a classic, absolutely.
Yeah. Runaway Jury, that's another good one.
Who's in Runaway Jury again? Was that was the one with Julia Roberts? Or am I confusing it?
Yeah, I think so, isn't it? Oh, is that?
No.
Is that a different one?
Well, the one I was thinking of, I was thinking of the one with Paul Newman, but maybe I've got the wrong one, too.
That was a great movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's where he defended the Mary Kay Places because her son died of some...
Yeah.
That was a phenomenal movie.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
What was that one? Hellboy, get on that.
Yeah.
Trying.
Paul Newman. See what comes up with it.
Go ahead, Luke. Mockingbird.
That's not Cool Hand Luke.
Great movie.
That's a silly guy. Well, now, and Marsh, when you... do you know what you should, it would be foolproof. You should get, we'd lend you Ruth Lord and because between Ruth and Mike, they can tell you who to keep off the jury.
That's right. They could. We'll just put Mike, we'll have him just come in, we'll tag team and have him do the closing. You know, that'll be a special appearance. Just come in and wing it.
Could you do that? Could you bring in a special guest to do a closing?
No, I don't
You
think
can't get permission
probably,
for that?
I don't think they would work with that too well, but it is what it is.
Have you ever, I mean, I know we joked about it earlier, but did you ever wish you just to do like a closing or an opening? Because
sure. You'd
have a lot of fun with that.
Sure. Well, you know, my grandmother was a court stenographer. And my dad actually grew up, when my dad was growing up in Tulsa, my dad would, after school, when all the other kids were playing ball or, you know, rehearsing for the class play, my dad would go downtown and he'd watch the lawyers working. He'd watch the trials. So, just doing that, I think he not only wanted to be a lawyer, but I think he always sort of regarded himself as kind of an amateur lawyer.
Well, this is my own ignorance about it, but did she have those little things they tap on the...
Sure.
Those were still around?
Well,
they
were bringing them in, but she actually just used shorthand.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then later in about the last 10 years of her career, she was pretty much stone deaf, so it made for a lot of interesting transcripts. You never know what was going to be on the transcript.
Yeah, when I very first became a lawyer, there was this very elderly gentleman. He was still handwriting all
the
court notes.
Yeah, that was my grandmother,
which was amazing. The huge pads and the paper, and they're just writing as fast as they can with shorthand. It wasn't being typed.
That was the stenographer?
That was the stenographer. It was all handwritten notes.
Yeah.
Well, there was no typing at that point yet. It didn't exist yet.
Well, what do you call those things? The stenographer things they hit now.
Stenographic machine. But now they're recording it all. It goes back into a pool where you don't even have stenographers in the room anymore a lot of times. They just go into this mass room where people are, you can see them.
Well, that's what they do at sporting events now, like the Super Bowl and the Masters. They started doing it about 20 years ago where they would tape, you know, the tape would come in and they would be transcribing as they're doing it. But they would have to clean it up, and there was always like a lot of screw ups in the transcript. They give you like quick notes because the word would be heard wrong or would be heard wrong by the software that they're using. But it's
just like my grandmother. I'm sure all sorts of people were illegally convicted because they couldn't read the transcript.
They went back.
There's
over
probably people still in prison because of her.
She kept that going. Well, Marsh, what's your gut tell you now with how long Hernandez is going to be found guilty, or is he going to walk on this thing?
I think,
or is there a compromise of some sort?
I think they're going to find him guilty. I think, like you said, I think they made him think a little bit, like we're saying here, but Mike's saying. But I think at the end of the day, it's like, give me a break. But the problem they have is their argument is you may have just that gut feel that they did it, but if the jury really follows their instructions, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. Saying if you have a reasonable doubt that they proved he was at the scene, but did they really prove that he caused the death or was a co-conspirator in the death? They arguably maybe didn't. So I think the 2012 double murder case is going to be tougher because of the other testimony they have there that can come against him. And that's going to be a tougher case. So even if he wins, he's still be held in custody.
Well, and he's not being let out. I mean, if he wins, he's still going to be in custody.
Right. So he's not going anywhere.
Well, the other thing is by the time they let him out, they would let him out of prison, he'll probably have killed three more people.
Well, it's happened in the cell.
Sure, it already has, yeah.
Now, we talked about that earlier, Marsh. Lawrence Phillips, suspected of killing a cellmate. Who else could it possibly be?
Well, interesting enough, they'd say the other main suspect, though, is another guy was killed in the prison, and that guy's cellmate, because two murders happened.
Yes,
maybe
at the
same day. Was it the same day?
I think so.
Same day. So you got two guys in the prison killed the same day, so they're going, well, we know the one guy killed the other guy, so maybe he also killed both of them. So.
Well, it could have been a guard, but generally they only go into the cells to have sex with the prisoner. So
so that sort of reduces the chance of that having happened.
Yeah. I'm just kidding about that.
Now, it's day six of deliberations for Hernandez. Would you have, how do you regard what the attorney did at the last minute?
I think it's the only shot he had. I mean, you just got to.
But
I mean,
it seems to have left some doubt then.
No, I think it's a strong argument. Look, there's their obligation to prove every single element of the case, and they proved he was there, but they haven't proved he was actually doing the murder. And that's where you love to get one of the other co-defendants to turn, give him a sweet deal, get him to testify, get something like that. Again, they didn't have the weapons. That's part of it. If you'd had a gun with fingerprints on it, DNA on it, that would have helped a lot. When you're missing those, and you really don't have a clear motive. I mean, you've got that some arguments about that, but they don't have a real clear motive for the death either. So when you're missing those kind of things, that's a tougher case for the state.
If you watch the movie on HBO about Robert Durst, I mean, he killed a guy, chopped him into little pieces, and, put him in bags and disposed of them, and he was acquitted. So you can get acquitted of anything under the right circumstances.
Yeah, like I said, I've won cases I should never win. I've lost cases I should never lose. And it's just a jury's a very unpredictable animal. They mean well, but sometimes the rational, what they focus on, the little point in a case they choose to focus on, is just blows me away sometimes.
Did you see any of that Robert Durst movie?
I've just heard rave things about that. But the last thing I want to do at night is when I go home is do anything that's law related. But I will make myself watch that.
He actually killed the woman who used to be married to my third cousin. So I had kind of a personal interest, But that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
That's for another time.
Well, we'll take a quick break. Thank you. Marsh Hallberg, Hallberg Criminal Defense. Marsh will stay with us, but thank you to Smart Start MN Ignition Interlock Systems. If you need to drive, they can help. For sponsoring, by the way, Hellboy, interestingly, 15th best time. In 2013, it would have been the 15th best. This year, it's the 15th best.
I went back and found the article that they just compared him to four other guys. They didn't say that it was.
Okay. Yeah, this would have been
bad.
It would have been the 15th best time, this year, too, which I find interesting that 458 put your 15th best in 2013 and 2015. Didn't look at 2014. We're going to take a quick break. You want to start calling 651-989-9105. We are going to give away Twins tickets to Thursday's game. You don't want to miss that because you'll get an opportunity to see the Kansas City Royals stay undefeated. So that's a great opportunity that you don't want to miss. It could be historic the way the start they have to the season.
I think a goal is if the Twins could lose by less than the Timberwolves lose by. And just, you know.
Well, it took them four games before they scored an earned run. Right? That took a while to get going, too. But we're going to come back, and it's going to be easy to win. We're going to have a little spelling bee of twins' names. And Mike is going to be if Terry can get back through to us, she will be a lifeline. And Mike, you can use them once, though, so don't blow your lifeline. Each caller can use Mike once to help with the spelling. Because he could spell every name that's probably going back to the first Senators, too.
I covered the Twins. It took me 3 years to learn how to spell Yastrzemski, so don't count on it.
We'll be right back. 651-989-9105. Start calling if you want those Twins tickets.
The Bob Sansevier Show. Only on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We're back. Joined by Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense. Mike Gelfand, you want to say from anything?
I would say from University High School.
So that's...
That was my last academic affiliation
that you liked?
Conferred a degree upon me.
Well, that was like, was it Otis Sistrunk?
Yeah,
wasn't
he was the University of Mars.
Mars, yeah.
Yeah.
The old
yeah.
Oakland Raider.
Yeah.
We've got four callers. And it's simple. Little spelling bee of twins' names. You get the names, spell them all right. Whoever goes the longest, and you could use Mike Gelfand, and you could use Marsh Hallberg as a lifeline, but you can only use each one once per person. So you could keep this going for a while. Let's go first to Chad in Elk River. Chad, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Not too bad. We'll give you an easy one to start off. You know, we'll build. Jack Morris. Can you spell Morris?
M. O-R-R-I-S.
Very good. You've done spelling bees before. Let's go to...
I failed them. We'll
you're doing... You're going around two, though. All right. Peter in Coon Rapids. Peter, are you ready?
I am.
Brian Harper. Spell Harper.
H-A-R-P-E-R.
My God, you're good. All right. Let's go to... is it Jack?
Jason.
Jason, excuse me.
River Falls.
In River Falls. Jason, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready, Bob.
All right. Not too much pressure on you. Spell Al Newman. How do you spell Newman?
N-E-W-M-A-N.
Bob, why do I get the feeling you're trying to make this thing last till the end of the show?
No, we're just giving them... We want them all to feel good about themselves in the first round.
A false okay. sense of security.
And then, Bob, if people felt good about themselves, they wouldn't be listening to you.
Mike, sometimes your words sting. Ouch.
I don't even know what I meant by that.
Who's our next caller here?
Mike from Minneapolis.
Mike, how are you?
Hey.
All right, Mike, this is the one to make you feel good about yourself. Chili Davis. How do you spell Chili Davis?
Capital D-A-V-I-S.
Ooh, first one to go with the capital. Very good. All right, now we go back to Chad, and things could get interesting. Chad, you ready?
Sure.
Mike Pagliarulo. How do you spell Pagliarulo?
Ah, boy. Can I use a lifeline?
Go ahead. You want to use Mike or you want to use the counselor?
Let's go with the counselor.
Okay.
Good choice. I don't know who the guy is.
He was part of that 91 World Series team.
Do you want me to throw mine out there for you?
Go ahead.
Pagliarulo.
Are you going to go with that?
Pagliarulo. Yep.
Paglia. Spell it again. You spelled it two different ways here.
Pagliarulo.
Okay. And the first spelling was with it, without the A. Are you going to go with that, Chad?
Let's go with it.
All right. Congratulations. Now we have. Is Terry there too? Terry.
Yep.
Terry, we're doing a spelling bee of twins' names, and you could be a lifeline too.
Okay.
All right.
God.
All right, we're going out of Peter in Coon Rapids. Steve Bedrosian. Spell Bedrosian.
Yeah, I'm just going to use Mike as a lifeline.
Bedrosian, B-E-D-R-O-S-I-A-N.
You going with that?
Yes.
Now, you've used up your lifeline here.
I know.
All right. And Terry's a lifeline, too. Terry Train from the KQ Morning Show can be used as a lifeline. She loves baseball.
Let's see. Mike Gelfand or Terry Train? What am I going to use?
Well, I'd go with you, Terry.
Got a lot of holes in my knowledge here, though, Terry.
Jason from River Falls. Jason, you ready?
Yes.
Rick Aguilera.
A-G-U-I-E-L-E-R-A.
A-G... Spell it again, I think.
A-G-U-I-L-E-R-A.
A-G-U-I-L-E-R-A is correct. A I thought he spelled it differently the first time, did he?
But then his final answer was the correct answer.
The final answer was the correct one. That was good. All right, now we go to Mike. Chuck Knobloch. How do you spell Knobloch?
I should know that one. First, I want to say I feel like I'm back in 1986 with you guys, and I'm going to do a lifeline with Terry.
Fuck. Pressure's on.
Terry, did you say... Never mind.
She didn't know.
No, she didn't.
And you are...
Spell?
Do I start spelling then?
Go ahead, spell.
Okay. K-N-O-B-L-A-U-C-H.
Are you going with that, or are you going with a negative indicator, Mike?
I'll go with it.
We're going to round three with everybody here. Wow.
We have smart listeners.
Nice. Well, we've got guys and women who can spell and help out. This one is going to be no lifelines allowed in round three. All right?
Good idea.
Chad, you ready?
And you got time frame, too.
Juan Berenguer. Spell Berenguer.
B-E-R-G-E-N-E-A-R.
Chad, hold on. If everybody screws up, you could still be in the running. All right, we go now to Peter. Peter, you ready?
Yep.
Dan Schatzeder. Spell Schatzeder.
S-H-A-F-T-E-R.
Hold on, the other ones may be wrong, too. We go to Jason in River Falls. You and Chad aren't dead yet. Terry, you want to take a shot at that one?
Schatzeder?
Yeah.
C-H-A-F-I-T-E-R. I don't know.
That was closer than he was. All right, let's go.
You win, Terry.
Let's go to Jason in River Falls. Ready, Jason? Yeah.
Yes.
Steve Lombardozzi. Spell Lombardozzi.
L-O-M-B-A-R-D-O-Z-Z-I.
Jason, if Mike doesn't get this next one, you're going to win those tickets. But
sounds good.
It hasn't done yet. You know what? We're going to go. Mike, you there?
I'm here.
You spell Dan Schatzeder. I want to hear that spelled right for a change.
Schatzeder?
Schatzeder.
Schatzeder.
Dan Schatzeder.
Schatzeder.
Congratulations to Jason. You win the tickets. No, it's Schatzeder. So thank you very much. Jason was our only one to get it right in round three. Guys, that was a lot of fun. Thanks for taking part. Now,
thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Now, Terry, obviously Mike is here. Now, Terry, have you met Marsh before?
No, I have not.
You actually did once, but you wouldn't remember that. You were so drunk.
Oh, yeah.
No, we were... Actually, it was at a judge's swearing-in party afterward. Real quickly, we chatted, but that was a long time ago.
Is that Mike Fahey?
Yes, at Mike Fahey's party, yep.
Oh, absolutely. That was in Shakopee, and he's a great ambassador for Johnson Baseball.
Well, you got a good memory. Yep, exactly right. Yeah, Mike
she doesn't
go
have
back.
A good phone, but she has a good memory.
He was a very good friend of my dad.
You know, this is absolutely true story, I gotta say. So Mike Fahey's a judge out in Carver County.
Yep.
This is so long ago, and the world has changed so much. I was a prosecutor a zillion years ago, and Mike was a defense attorney before he became a prosecutor and a judge. We tried a trial, and his father was the judge. So it's like, jury, ignore the facts that the attorney is my son. I swear to God.
He said that?
No, he didn't say that. But it was like everybody, the name Fahey out in Carver County is like everywhere. You know, there's a
why do they allow that?
Well, it was just, there's the only judge we had. It was what we did back in the day. You know, it was,
wow. There's a realty office and everything, isn't there?
Yeah, this was Fahey everything. You know, they're like rats. They're everywhere.
Fahey, isn't there auctioneering place too?
Yep.
Same family?
I don't know. They're all related. Some it's all these old farm names that came. You know, there's a half a dozen names out there that are, you know, there's a thousand of every one of them because they're
well,
the
that's
original.
I'm in Carver County right now. So.
Oh.
That's where the farm is.
Good.
What kind of farm is that, Terry?
That's an apple orchard vineyard. And we're doing weddings, graduations, parties.
Really?
No bar mitzvahs?
That's
discrimination.
Yes, we are.
Oh, come on. Come on, Terry. Out in that county, you could throw a matzo ball and not hit a Jew.
We've got one booked out for 2018.
Okay.
So, Terry, what is your favorite apple?
Well, I really like the Sweet Tango, and I really like Keepsake.
Keepsake.
The parent of the Honeycrisp. I like them all, but if I had a pick.
And they are great. We were out at the orchard there last summer, and Carrie laid like about a 30-pound bag of apples on me, and they were the best apples I've ever had. They were really good.
Thank you.
And Terry has learned to say that they're all great and not really.
Oh, Bob, they actually are. But
no, they're very. You have great apples out there, Terry.
I think the Honeycrisp actually tasted better in October.
What did you just kill?
Yeah, did you just step on a goat or something?
That's Toddy the donkey. He's crying because I have Tommy out.
Oh.
Named after my brothers.
Hey, Terry, we want to thank you for... Thanks so much for calling in. And well, you want to say goodbye to Mike? Not that you'll see him again, of course, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll see her out at the orchard in a few months.
Yeah, we'll see each other again. It's just a joy to hear you on the radio. It really sounds good. And like I said, you haven't skipped a beat. You're still... a wise ass.
Well, thank you. I'll see you soon, Terry.
Okay. See you soon. Nice talking to you again, Marsh. See
Take
you,
care.
Bob.
All right, Terry. Thanks. Terry Train from the KQ Morning Show. And Terry, Mike, and I, we were together for about a quarter of a century. That was a lot of fun. We are going to take a quick break. Marsh Hallberg will stay with us. Mike Gelfand will be with us. We're going to talk to Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. We'll be right back with Marsh, Mike, and Jim.
How about that, by the way?
Two of the teams in town have the worst record in their leagues. Your Twins and your Timberwolves. And we are joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim, this is it's a fun day for me because Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense is with us. And Mike Gelfand, who I was on the KQ Morning Show with for a quarter of a century, has joined us today. And it's been a lot of fun. And Mike used to cover the Twins, so he knows he certainly knows a lot about that team.
And a lot about failure.
Well, yeah, that's what we all have in common in Minnesota. We all learn how to deal with failure.
Yeah, this team now. Well, the Twins with 1-6, and it doesn't the way. Kansas City's undefeated. I don't see them. It would be surprising if they could win one of these next couple of games tomorrow and Thursday. And you got the Wolves now sitting with the worst record, but I don't know if it makes a huge difference. It's what 25% chance getting the first overall as opposed to 19.9.
Well, I think with the Wolves, they just need to get lucky for once. I mean, they've been a terribly run franchise for most of their history. They've also had pretty much the worst luck of any franchise I've ever seen. Although, the Twins are starting to challenge for that. That's the interesting thing. We always call the Wolves curse. Now you look at the Twins, and, they signed Santana to a record-breaking deal, suspension. They signed Nolasco to what then was a record-breaking deal for that franchise, and I think he pitched hurt all last year, and if he didn't pitch hurt, then he really is one of the worst free agent signings in baseball history. Mauer's had the injury problems. Morneau, at his absolute peak, gets the concussion that ruined at least his Twins' stay. The Puckett waking up with not being able to see. Even Aguilera getting turned into a starting pitcher, picking up a suitcase, not being able to pitch in 96 with what was a very good team. Some of the plays that have hurt them against the Yankees. You do wonder. I mean, I don't believe in curses, but sometimes there are runs of coincidence that don't look very good.
Well, and it's not good at all where they are in their new stadium. Maybe something happened on the land Target Center and Target Field sit on that it's cursed.
Well, with the Wolves, Bob Stein, the old president, and Jeff Mierke and people like that, you sit around and actually ask, is there something wrong with the land? Do we need an exorcism?
I was kidding.
And the other one, and I've written about it a few times, is Mierke always talks about it. He said they hired this guy. They heard somebody. There's some word around town that there's this old guy who would go to clubs late at night, and it looked like the creepy old guy in the club, and then a certain song would come on, and he would go out in the middle of the floor and break dance and just stop the place cold. So they hire this guy. They bring him into the. And they do the same routine where, everybody's kind of dancing during one of the commercial breaks, and this guy walks down the court and starts breakdancing, and everybody freaks out. Well, and his name is Joey Two-Step. So they keep Joey around for a little while. After a while, Joey started fraternizing a little too much with female employees, harassing, stalking, whatever word you want to use. So they bring Joey in, and they tell him, Joey, we love your dancing. I mean, we're going to let you go. And Joey looks at him and says, I place a hex on you. Nobody fires Joey Two-Step. And that pretty much explains Timberwolves' history.
Well, maybe they should have hired him to break David Kahn's legs, because that was a real curse.
I was hoping somebody would hire me to do that. And that's the thing. Sometimes it's bad luck. Sometimes it's a good manager making a bad decision. I mean, general manager making a bad decision. But David Kahn, that there's no excuse for that. You hired a guy who knew nothing about basketball to run your entire basketball operation. That is the single worst hire in Minnesota sports history.
You know, you shake his hand, and you then you shake your hand, and the slime comes off. He was
didn't know anything about basketball. And the funny thing is, when he first came to town, he thought he was a spin master. He thought he was a great PR guy as well as a great general manager. And so, you know, I'd rip them or I'd rip him, and he'd call me the next day and try to explain. Well, and one day he called me up and said, listen, you have to understand we're running the triangle offense here. And he gave me, like, you know, the Wikipedia version of what the triangle offense is. And so I started asking him questions, and he ran out of things. He couldn't explain, you know, it was like once he got off script, he was screwed.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Jim, why did he get hired in the first place then? What was the dynamic that caused that hire?
Because they had about three really good candidates. And, you know, the Wolves have a terrible reputation around the league for the way they run their front office. And by the way, I'm talking about my current owner, Glenn Taylor. So I'm about to get myself fired. Please, just, you know, hit the dumb button when I really get close to getting myself fired.
Get ready, David.
So, you know, they had three really good candidates, and, you know, Glenn tells a different story than the one I've heard from people I know really well. And Glenn basically says, we didn't want those guys. We thought David would be a good manager. You know, he helped with the Indiana Pacers. He worked under some good people with the Pacers. My information has always been that Glenn didn't exactly impress the top candidates. He asked the top candidates to take psychological tests, and they all went back to their former places and said, I don't think I'm going to go there. And so Taylor's kind of left in a lurch. He needs a general manager. And David Kahn had done a lot of favors for David Stern in the D League, in the developmental league. And so those guys were tight. And David Stern said, listen, give Kahn a chance. He knows what he's doing. Taylor hires him, even though the guy has nothing on his resume, and he ends up being a joke.
That's what I heard, too, that it had to do with he was pushed on him, basically, by Stern. But now, did he agree to take the psychological test, or he didn't? He never took it either, then?
I think he reverse-failed it. I think he was so crazy he passed.
Well, see, I would want the guy who refused.
Yes, exactly. That's the guy I'd hire. Or I'd hire somebody who knew what shape a basketball was.
His problem was he thought he knew what he was doing, and that made him very dangerous. And he had been a basketball writer, because every writer thinks they can run a team better.
I know you have a lawyer there, so let me insult a lawyer. Let me tell kind of my version of the lawyer.
You insulted everybody else. I was the only one left. So.
Well, yeah. But listen, it's like any business. They're great journalists. They're completely shoddy journalists. They're great lawyers. They're terrible journalists. Terrible lawyers. But the bad lawyer is the guy who thinks he can twist truth to fit whatever he needs to be. Mm-hmm. And that was David Kahn. David Kahn thought he could talk his way into being a good general manager, that he could talk that all he had to do was kind of convince people that he was good at his job, and then therefore he would be good at his job. And, you know, so he spent more time trying to convince people that he knew what he was doing than actually doing anything that could have possibly proved he knew what he was doing. If that made any sense.
Well, there was a time when we thought the worst thing he ever did, of course, was the Johnny Flynn signing, but now I'd say the Rubio thing looks just as bad.
But I know, I give, you know, listen, when you draft somebody, you can't control how healthy they're going to be in the future. And Rubio is a good player. Mm-hmm. And now here are the problems with that draft. Johnny Flynn instead of Steph Curry. Okay, that's just crazy. I mean,
that's a Hall of Fame bad pick.
It is. Now, but what I'm saying is there are times that a good general manager, somebody who knows what he's doing, we'll take player A instead of player B, and it'll end up making them look stupid. But at that time, everybody thought the same thing.
Right.
This was David Kahn, again, doing. It's a big difference between having a bad result from a good process and having a bad result from a terrible process. This is a bad result from a terrible process. David Kahn wanted Johnny Flynn because he saw him have that big game in the Big East tournament on TV, and he thought, and that was basically the extent of his knowledge. So because he looked great on TV one night, David Kahn takes a 5'6" guard who can't shoot, who has never asked to play man-to-man defense at Syracuse, and David Kahn drafts him and says he's going to be an all-defensive team guy. I mean, that was the weakest part of this game was defense.
Kahn thought he was too smart for the room, so he didn't want to do the obvious thing.
Well, that's part of it, too. And the other thing is that Steph, you know, there were questions about whether Steph Curry, who's a very skinny guy, whether he would adapt to or be big enough to play the shooting guard, be strong enough to play the point guard, and of course he is. But, you know, so then you have Johnny Flynn instead of Steph Curry, which is stupid. You have Rubio, which is not a bad pick if you didn't just have, if you didn't just draft another point guard, but he did. And then you have Ty Lawson, who might have ended up being the best of those players, not Steph, but best of the players he actually chose, and he gets rid of them to Denver. Ty Lawson would have been probably as good at, or better than Rubio down the stretch. And then the next year, I think maybe even worse, Wes Johnson, a guy who really can't shoot, isn't very athletic, again, played at Syracuse, so he's never asked to play man-to-man defense, instead of DeMarcus Cousins, who is a monster.
Well, you know, one of the things about Rubio, and I agree with most of what you said, but famous last words are, he's young, he'll learn to shoot.
Oh, now, I don't agree with that, necessarily. I mean, you can get better. The problem with Rubio is he hasn't dedicated himself to it. But again, that's not something you necessarily know on draft night.
Yeah.
No. But you know, if Rubio would just spend an entire offseason doing nothing but shooting, he would become a good enough shooter to be a... I mean, he's already a good NBA player. He could be a really good NBA player if he would just dedicate himself to an offseason of nothing but shooting. But he always goes and plays for Team Spain, and he always just does what he's already good at, which is running a team, and he doesn't improve his weaknesses.
And a bad team, which is what the Timberwolves are, can't really afford a point guard who can't shoot. Some teams maybe could.
Right, absolutely. And if you put Rubio with four All-Stars, he's ideal.
Yep.
You know? But the thing is, the NBA coaches and NBA defensive systems are really underrated because of the old cliche, you know, the defense, nobody plays defense in the NBA, which is just BS. Defenses are always going to give you the shot they want you to take. And that's the problem. Is as good as Rubio is at many things, NBA defenses are always going to say, okay, tonight we're giving Rubio the 20-footer. And if he can't make that shot, it's always going to haunt him.
Hey Jim, tell us what's on Suhan Unfiltered.com.
I'm heading to the local downtown Minneapolis. Michael Russo, my guest, at 5 o'clock or 5-ish. Then Michael and I are going to do another special edition at the Lithy on Thursday afternoon. Michael will be calling in from St. Louis on that one. And then Friday night, probably 6 o'clock at O'Gara's, my buddy Jerry Zagoda covers the Wolves and who covered the North Stars. So we're going to talk some new basketball and some old hockey on Friday night at O'Gara's.
That's great. You're loaded. Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Good talking to you guys. Thanks.
All right, take care. Marsh Hallberg, Mike Gelfand with us. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our guy, our hockey expert, Jack Jablonski. We'll be right back.
Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show, Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We're back, and we are joined, we being Hellboy here, Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense, Mike Gelfand. We're all joined by Jack Jablonski. Jack, I got one question.
What's that?
Wild in X or St. Louis in X? How many games is this going, and are the Wild going to win it?
I've got Wild in 7. I think that compared to last year, where the Wild were extremely good at home, since we've acquired Dubnyk, we've been pretty much unstoppable on the road, setting a franchise record with 11 or so, And now, you know, I can see the Wild taking a few games in St. Louis, especially with the inconsistency of their goaltending.
Now, actually, I want to, before we talk more about that, now I mentioned Mike Gelfand. Yeah, I know your parents have listened to the morning show. Did you listen, were you listening in high school? Do you remember Mike?
Mike Morris?
No, Mike Gelfand from the morning show.
Oh, Mike Gelfand?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, your parents actually let you listen. Wow.
Jack was a bit of he was a rebel when he was in high school.
100%.
And he would listen.
So, Jack, what do you think on the first game? Are we going to take the first game?
First game, it's a little iffy. You know, I give this one to St. Louis just because Dubnyk got pulled in the last game, and I give those guys a little bit of time for him to set in. Along with that, there's a lot of emotion going on with game one being at home. St. Louis is very frustrated, obviously, the past few years, not coming up with the expectations that they had in the playoffs. So I expect a hot start from then. But overall, I'm pretty confident in Minnesota's ability with the way that they've been able to play in the playoffs and the type of game that they match up with St. Louis.
Now, Jack, you got to tell us, where are you now? You at the beach again? He goes to the beach all the time, Mike. All the time, Mike.
He never goes to class.
No.
No. I'm out on my courtyard just catching some rays and probably acquiring some skin cancer right now too.
Well, because it sounded like I hear birds in the background. Yeah. You got some chirping going on there?
Yeah, there's birds in the background. I can't hear the noise. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's fine. It's real. It's the we're getting you in your and the birds' natural habitat.
Very much so. I'm part of them.
Listen, you know, Mike, it's amazing. He is a Southern California boy now, and he's adopted that lifestyle. He's at the beach, or he's at his, and it is from what he described, a beautiful courtyard.
Yeah,
it's he's got his parents fooled. He told me, I really need to get someplace warm.
It's not hard to adapt out there. I found.
Yeah,
well, you're looking at schools. If you get on the USC campus, there's no school that's got a prettier campus than that one. It is absolutely gorgeous.
Marsh knows what I'm talking about.
Yep. Nope. I had a daughter go through there and got to go there many times, many games, and it's a wonderful place to be.
Now, Jack, is it? Go ahead. I cut you off there.
No, I was just saying that you can't come here and say that you don't want to be here. It's beautiful.
Yeah. How tough is it? My son, by the way, went to Berkeley, and he left after 1 year. He said it wasn't liberal enough. And you know what? I've never been prouder.
Now, Jack, how tough is it going to a school where there's really not very good-looking women?
Oh, it's a tough one out here. You know?
Yeah, I bet it is. So you're feeling pretty good, though, about the Wilds' chances, huh?
Yeah, I am. I really am. I think
I'm surprised you said seven, Jack. I really am. I thought you'd say
you
in six.
Left?
I'm surprised you said in seven. I thought you'd see them winning in less than seven.
Well, they haven't been as good at home this year, and overall, I think they've become more of a complete team, able to win on the road. Now, obviously, that does give them the chance to win more games at home when clinching, but at the same time, you have to look at St. Louis. This is a big team that has its number when it comes to the Wild in previous years. This year has been a little bit different, but the Wild have to watch out for Backus and a lot of their bigger, more physical guys. You can't, you've got to give them the leeway opposed to lining up Backus with Granlund every once in a while. He's double the size and double the age, but overall, is a little concerning when it comes to the strength. And with playoff hockey, overall, you've got to watch out for the physicality, and that's one thing that's a little bit concerning. So I do see it going long.
Now, Mike, I got it because I just saw the odds here, and you could decipher them for us. I mean, the Wild are 5-4 favorites, plus 125. St. Louis, 20-29. Minus 145. So that makes the Wild the favor there, right? The favored, if they're 5-4 odds.
Yeah, it sounded like you had to lay 50 to make a $40 profit.
So definitely not worth the bet, but...
No, but I mean, they're favored, though. There aren't many teams. Yeah. Not many road teams are favored.
No, you're very right. And, you can't look forward, but you have to look to... seeing that you've got Minnesota, who last year and the year before went in the playoffs, had goalie problems. Yep. That was our biggest issue. Now you look at this series and you see Brian Elliott or Allen. They haven't even announced who they're starting. For me, looking at that, I have a lot more trust in the Wild when you have someone to lean on, but you don't have as much goal scoring. Where you have goal scoring on one team like St. Louis, but the goaltending is iffy, and we've run into that problem with ourselves the last 2 years. This year, it's flip-flopped, and I'm not satisfied with the first-round matchup. Obviously, Nashville or Chicago would have been much more favorable, but, we're not playing Anaheim, and St. Louis overall is a team that, they weren't on fire going down the stretch.
So, Elliott and Allen, what do you think that? If you're coaching the Blues, who are you putting in net?
I have to put in Elliott. I think overall he's been more consistent. He's played a little bit more this year, and he's had more time to become a number one goalie. I don't necessarily think he's the number one starter for the future. Allen looks to be he's impressive over the last 2 years that he's come up and played, but overall I think the consistency, and he's not a veteran, but Elliott has definitely had more experience even in the playoffs.
Well, Jack, as always, we appreciate you taking the time with us. By when we talk to you next Tuesday, they will have played, three games?
Three
two games on the road, and next Monday night they play here.
Yep. Exactly, yeah. it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a good series, and it's time for playoff hockey in Minnesota.
And, Jack, I just got a text from your mom saying, got back from visiting Jack in L.A. Actually, she witnessed you studying. Good for you, Jack. You'd made it look good when your mom
knows
was there.
Knows how to fool mom.
Yep, he pulled it off. Thank you, Jack. Jack Zablonski. Thank you to Marsh Hallberg from Hallberg Criminal Defense. And Mike, I can't say it enough. Thank you so much for joining us today. It was fun, and I hope we could work it out that you can join us again.
Absolutely.
It was fun. And it was great having Terry call in, too, and hearing from Terry. That was fun. Then thank you again to Mike Gelfand. And we're going to take off, and we're going to turn it over to superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson. We'll see you tomorrow.
Or disappear into the potter's ground. When the man comes around.
Three signals strong. 105 The Ticket.